So, you know, increasingly over the, you know, as once Putin attacked, you know, the options to leave became more and more limited. Originally, you had options of trains and cars, and people started to leave. But increasingly, became the whole place became jammed. So I was getting reports of 20, 30, 40 hours of driving out of the city. Trains became completely chaotic. Became women and children first. There was scenes of pushing and shoving and panic at the train stations. And so, obviously, there were no cars left. There was one car left in the hotel, and it was left by another journalist's crew. They had a spare car left over, and they told me that it was available. I tried to hire it. I then found out, after I thought I'd hired it, that indeed it had been hired to somebody else, which was not great news, obviously.
Sure.
I then found out via the car company, they were nice enough to contact the others that had hired it. It turns out it was a Swedish couple. They were medical students, and they agreed to take me as long as I was happy to sit next to their Doberman, which I was more than happy to do to get out, right? So we pile into a 2012 Kia sedan, and we drive 14 hours from Kyiv to Lviv. We got redirected due to blown bridges, roadblocks. We literally drove past live shelling and mortar fire 10 meters from the road as Ukrainians are firing on Russians and Russians are firing back. So it was extraordinarily hairy. We mapped out a path. So we managed to pair up with another car, a Russian family, and they suggested a route through the middle of two active Russian deployed military armies. And so it was a country road, and he said, look, there's active fights here, there's active fights there, but if we get through here, we'll be able to make it to Lviv. All the other routes were sort of more or less cut off, or were very, very roundabout and taking a long time. And so we took a punt, we made it through. So I got to Lviv at about 4 or 5 a.m. in the morning. There was no accommodation. The place is just no accommodation, clearly, because millions of people have been displaced and are heading west. And so we found out there was a refugee shelter at a local high school and banged on the door, and thank God they took us in. So I slept a couple of hours on a basketball court. It was pretty hairy, but, you know, ultimately, as dramatic as that sounds, like, you know, my heart and fear goes out to all the, you know, people that I know and all the Ukrainians that are trapped in parts of the country being attacked by the Russians right now. So it's, very heartbreaking, very concerning.
You said in that trip to Lviv you got pretty close to Russian troops. How close did you get?
Well, we got within 5 to 10 meters of Ukrainian troops, but having spoken to people, they're probably shelling them. They're probably about 5 kilometers away.
Right. Okay. Yeah. It's everybody. The edict is all males under 60 not to leave the country. Have everybody? Mm-hmm. Have all males been complying with that, or? Some still trying to get out of the country.
Well, not in my assessment, mate. The people I'm speaking to want to fight. You know, they're taking up President Zelensky's call to arm themselves. They're getting their hands on weapons and they're fighting. In the city where I am right now, if they're not fighting, they're helping local police to sniff out Russian spies and Russian saboteurs. I mean, I stick out like a bit of a sore thumb as a foreigner, and I get stopped routinely, which I'm happy enough to do. I explain that I'm an Australian journalist, and suspicions quickly shift to, you know, warm tidings. But they're rightly looking out for people that are trying to cause problems behind the front line. And so it's a huge full-scale mobilisation. But they're fighting. They're digging in. All ages. You know, I was speaking to a freedom fighter who told me that an old mechanic friend of his who said he could barely walk was happy to get his hands on a machine gun and point it at Russians to shoot them. So this is the sort of mindset the country's in, and I think that in many ways has explained why Putin has not got the definitive victory that he was hoping for.
Right. Look,
all reports...
Sorry, we've heard stories about these civilian soldiers. How is that working? What, they're just handing out guns willy-nilly? I mean, it sounds like it could be a bit of a rabble, Misha.
Well, look, they've got... Ukraine's got its own army. They've also called up the reservists, and each city region has a territorial defence unit. So they're basically a trained militia. Now, clearly, in a full mobilisation, you're trying to get as many people to fight as possible. The country is under severe stress and being invaded from three fronts. So, you know, you've got to get everybody active as best you can. Now, clearly, they need to be armed. And one of the biggest things that I'm hearing when I speak to sources in the government and sources in the military and those that are fighting is they want weaponry. They want training, they want communications equipment, but they specifically want weaponry and munitions. And, you know, President Zelensky said, you know, give me weapons, don't give me a ride, when he was being asked to move his government to Lviv. So the determination is there, and clearly they're holding off the Russian advances. But, you know, how long they can do that for, nobody quite knows. But every hour and every day they're able to do it. Here we sit, over a week since Russia first invaded, the sanctions are now clearly starting to bite. Putin, pressure's building on him. The ruble has collapsed. Interest rates have doubled to 20% as they try to keep capital in the country. He didn't have the guts to open his stock market because he knew there'd be a complete collapse in stock market as investment flees the country. So he's got problems.
Right.
And the oligarchs around him are not happy. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out as well, mate.
Very interesting. These supposed negotiation or peace talks that happen between officials from Ukraine and Russia, I believe, on the Belarusian border. And I've heard from a number of people they don't expect too much to come out of these. We believe that they will resume in a couple of days. What's the word on these so-called peace talks, Misha?
Well, they went ahead. Zelensky went up there and he said he was sceptical, but he was happy to do it because he's going to, you know, take every opportunity to try to find peace. Putin said there was no preconditions, but then afterwards he said, well, we need neutrality, we need various things. So essentially asking Ukraine to give up all its foreign policy sovereignty. So, you know, it doesn't appear to sound very fruitful. The Russians have increased their attacks since those talks collapsed. Now, there's potentially further talks, but the fighting is intensifying. I'm hearing reports in Kharkiv right now, which is in the east, in the center of a lot of intense fighting over the last few days. Bombing there is intensified. Civilian targets, regrettably, have been hit, and there's reports of 10 people at least being killed in civilians and 50 injured, as well as, we're seeing increased bombing in Kyiv. A friend of mine, who was about 10 kilometres north where I was staying in the centre, he said to me that the bombing was coming closer and that the bombs that had hit today were so close that his building was shaking. So the fighting is intensifying. The Russian aerial assault and bombardment is intensifying. So, you know, we've got to hope for peace, but it's critical that sanctions continue to escalate and build the pressure on Putin. Yeah, he's turned his country essentially into a panic room, and we need to raise the temperature because the Ukrainians can hang on and hold out, but the world needs to unite and help.
Well, in regards to that, the world needs to unite and help. Is there a feeling amongst the Ukrainians that you've spoken to that they'd like more help in the form of troops, etc., in Ukraine?
Well, I think there are sort of calls for troops, but I think realistically people understand that troops are unlikely. You know, the sanctions the call has been really strong, certainly over the last week, and the world has partly responded there, where you've seen the SWIFT ban of some Russian banks, so there are exemptions to that, and also you're seeing Switzerland for the first time in its history remove its complete doctrine of neutrality and start to freeze some Russian money. But of course, those sanctions can go further. One of the things that I'm hearing a lot, and I'm seeing it online, but I'm also hearing it from government sources, is that they're looking for what they call safe skies, a no-fly zone in military terms. So they're looking for, perhaps at least in the western part of the country, for NATO forces to provide a no-fly zone to give some safety and security to the forces on the ground and even the ledger a little bit. One of the main advantages that the Russians have is their aerial superiority, and it is making it very hard for the Ukrainians to fight. As you would know, you know, aerial superiority can often dictate victory in military fights. So that is an area that they're seeking help, though. You've got to think that's probably at the unlikely end. Nevertheless, the calls are there.
And since the invasion, you think there's more of a mood and a desire for Ukraine to join NATO?
Well, whether or not it's NATO, certainly the European Union Zelensky today called on the EU to allow them to have membership on a rapid basis, on essentially on a fast track. Whether or not that happens, it'd be interesting to see. Of course, European Union membership is not the same as NATO. NATO is a mutual defence treaty. So what that means basically is if one country is attacked, everyone is brought in to defend them, which is why it's been so heated between Russia and the West in terms of Ukrainian membership of NATO. If Ukraine were to join NATO, Putin would have essentially entire Western alliance right to his border. The European Union is more focused on trade and movement of people, as we know. And so I think that's why Zelensky is trying to focus his attentions there, because that is more in line with the messaging of being a vibrant European Western-style democracy, which is what Ukrainians want, in my experience of talking to them.
And Misha, in your experience, what do you think the aim is here? What do you think the game is for Vladimir Putin? What do you think his end game is?
Well, it's hard to know. I mean, I spoke to John Bolton, who's Donald Trump's national security advisor and a long-term military expert. And he said to me that he thought the attacks on Kiev were a bit of a head fake, that it really wasn't about taking Kiev, but that what Putin wanted was carve out essentially an L shape, if you can imagine that, on the map of Ukraine. So that eastern bit where in Donbass right down to the Black Sea, and then essentially gobble up all of Ukraine's southern maritime borders and make the country landlocked. Kiev would remain, and his view was if by taking those bits, it gives him the security he needs in terms of buffer zone. It also gives him places to throw out the Ukrainian resistors and send them back to their homelands. And I thought that was an interesting take. I mean, I, of course, nobody knows. The only person knows the end game is Vladimir Putin. But the pressure is building on him undoubtedly. And it'd be interesting to see the decisions he makes in the coming days. And I think the decisions he makes will give a sense of the pressure he's under internally from the oligarchs that surround him and the Russian people. There's protests in Russia too. There's protests of anti-war protests you're seeing being reported. So, you know, it's not all smooth sailing for Putin. But, you know, he promised a decisive and quick victory. I think he thought, certainly promised that they'd have Zelensky knocked out in the first day or two and that he'd be marched down the street in chains and a puppet government to be put in place. That hasn't happened. They've rallied around their president, the Ukrainian people. They're fighting hard, fighting like tigers. And, you know, Zelensky's sort of, you know, for those that don't know him, you know, his background is he's a Jewish TV comedian.
Yes.
He's sort of now taken this, he's taken this on a like Churchillian persona, you know, he's meeting the moment of history. And, you know, it's in the balance, mate, but every day they hang on, it's a day of pressure on Putin and a day of hope for the Ukrainian people.